Well, hi, and welcome to the Dr. Robin Show, which is cutting-edge issues, controversies, and conundrums of the day. This is actually an extension of my radio show, which I had for a while. It was a popular medical radio show once a week with call-ins. And this one's going to be more fun. We're podcasting it now. I'm here with my wife and co-host and social worker, Susie Robbins. If you want to email us at DocLarryRobbins at AOL, it's right on the website. You can click on it, or DocLarryRobbins, DocLarryRobbins at AOL.com. With any questions or issues, we can talk about them in future shows. Or you can just email us with any comments, and we'll certainly read them on future shows. If there's any topics that you want to talk about, just let us know. Well, Suze, are you ready for today's show?
I'm looking forward to it.
Terrific. Well, the first issue is a meaty topic that you're not going to believe. A doctor, believe it or not, was sanctioned for telling a woman that she's overweight. It's an unbelievable story. This New Hampshire doc, you may have seen this on TV or heard it on radio, he told a woman that she was obese and she needed to lose weight. She complained that it wasn't very nice, and she complained to the authorities, believe it or not. He was sanctioned even though he wrote an apology letter. And he's now refusing to take some course that the medical board suggested that he take. I guess it was a course on being nicer or something like that. What do you think about this? It's unbelievable. This fellow's name is Dr. Bennett. I saw him on TV, and he was terrific. He was a normal type guy. He says if he can't tell someone the truth as their doctor, what should he talk about? The weather? It gets worse and even more bizarre. Somehow, the state's attorney general, reminds me of the attorney general in the Duke rape case, getting into it for political reason, somehow the attorney general got into the, quote, investigation, unquote. Sheesh, talk about overkill. My gosh, what if I were to tell a patient that they should stop smoking? Will I get sued and indicted and reported? It's unbelievable. Well, Susie, do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, as you said, it certainly is a meaty issue. I'm thinking, first of all, that in the context of their conversation, it was doctor to patient. So obviously, this doctor was talking to her in terms of helping her to become a healthier person. I think she probably overreacted, obviously, by going to a lawyer. And it seems to me that instead of expending all this energy on trying to sue this doctor, she should be using this energy in a more positive way for herself to get healthier.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. I don't think she's actually sued so far, or I don't know if she's going to sue. But how about the attorney general? Is this a criminal thing? The doctor tells her that she needs to lose weight, and all of a sudden it's a criminal issue. It's unbelievable.
Well, think about all the things that you've probably said over the year to your patients in terms of helping them to become healthier or to make changes in their life. I'm sure you could certainly think of things that you have said that maybe to the wrong person they might take personally and become very angry with you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. They come to me for advice. I give them advice. And, you know, we can't be held to it. Also, you're a social worker. Say somebody's doing psychotherapy and they give advice or say something. They shouldn't all of a sudden have the attorney general on their back if they say to somebody that they need to stop smoking or something.
Absolutely, I agree with that. Although, you know, as a social worker or a therapist, we certainly try not to, quote, give advice, but rather talk through issues with people so that they can come up with the right plan for themselves. Whereas as a doctor, yes, you are more inclined to, quote, giving advice.
And that's a great point, yeah. The distinction, I'm sitting there for 10 minutes as a physician, so I'm giving more direct advice. And in therapy, I think therapy's great. I think the whole world probably needs therapy, but it's not where you go and get it. People have the wrong notion of therapy. Don't you think that they're going to go and people are going to, a therapist is going to tell them what to do? And that's not, what does happen in therapy?
Well, you know, there's this new catch-all phrase, life coaching. And I actually like that phrase because I think in the best of all worlds, what people do need is to be able to make their own decisions for what they need to do or want to do in their lives. And for this particular individual that we're speaking of, she probably needs to talk to somebody and understand why is it that she reacted so angrily to this doctor who was trying to help her get on a healthier path.
Yeah, absolutely. My understanding is life coaching, it's a combination of maybe some therapy, but more advice and organization, as opposed to when you go to somebody and you're in a depression or you want to work out childhood issues, which everybody has, it's not so much coaching, it's facilitating.
That's right. And we probably should make that distinction between, say, a life coach and a therapist. You know, I think when people do go into therapy, it's because of issues that maybe they're experiencing at that moment, but probably have dealt with all their lives, and they really need to just have somebody help, as you say, facilitate those issues with them and to be able to understand why they're feeling the way they are.
Yeah, and also the if you go to a therapist, they should be a licensed therapist, either a psychologist or a clinical social worker or a PsyD or psychiatrist, although these days most psychiatrists just do medicine, but some are still pretty good with therapy. As opposed to life coaching, I'm not sure that they have the stringent requirements. I know a number of people, usually the best life coaches are the therapists who turn coach, but I think that people can set themselves up as a life coach without all the qualifications. Do you think so?
You know, I'm not sure in terms of people billing themselves as life coaches exactly what parameters are needed in terms of education, but when, you know, another piece to it with life coaching would be helping an individual figure out what kind of careers they want. And that certainly would not most likely fall under a therapeutic.
Maybe more an educational life coach. Well, I think we'll segue on to our next topic du jour, which is a common one in the news, and there's new drugs and new treatments, ADD, attention deficit disorder. ADD is a real condition. It's pretty common. Almost 5% of adults have ADD. It tends to be somewhat underdiagnosed, with millions of people having it, but not that many people on treatment compared to how many people have it. The ADHD includes the H part for hyperactivity, but most people actually lose that hyperactivity by age 20 if they had it at all, that fidgety portion. But ADD is very genetic. Whenever I have a kid or an adolescent with ADD, or even an adult, we screen family members. One of the biggest problems with kids not taking their ADD medicine is that mom, who's in charge of the medicine, has ADD herself and can't get it together with the medicine. A lot of times a mom comes in and says, my daughter Heather, for instance, my daughter Sally was diagnosed with ADD, and I think I have it. And it's funny, I don't ask her, have you taken her medicine? I ask, what dose of the medicine actually works for you? Because it's amazing how many moms will take their kids' medicines, how many dads, how many spouses take each other's medicines. It's sort of scary in this country. We mix and match sometimes. Before we get into exactly what is ADD and what to do about it, Suze, you have any thoughts on it?
Well, I agree that it is, seems like it's become very pervasive in our society. It seems like we all know children who are taking medicine for it, and certainly it can follow into adulthood. I'm just wondering, is it on a continuum the way other disorders are? You know, sometimes I know for myself, I'll think, oh my God, these closets are such a mess, and I can't seem to get it together to clean them out. Can everybody, or can many people have a little bit versus a lot?
Well, that's a great question. You know, the trend in medicine these days is to go to the spectrum disorders. We have the bipolar spectrum disorder, where the severe bipolar end is about 1% of the population. But if you look at the spectrum, the milder end, it's probably about 4%. We have the autism spectrum disorder, ASD, which is the whole spectrum of mild, moderate, and severe autism. But with ADD, we haven't talked about it that much. There are certainly, everybody has features of ADD. Maybe I'll go into a little how we diagnose it. Really, the hallmark of ADD is a number of things. Difficulty doing boring subjects. If I had to ask one question, I ask an adult, did you have a lifelong or starting at age 8 or 10 trouble with boring projects? Because if people can sit there for an hour on a boring homework assignment or boring project, it's unlikely they have ADD. But careless mistakes, trouble starting projects, trouble finishing them, finishing homework assignments, kids very often don't turn them in, irritability, impulsivity, unfinished piles of stuff around, materials laying around. These are some of the hallmarks of ADD. Easily distracted, poor attention, difficulty remembering appointments.
I have something.
And the irritability and anger can be a problem with ADD. But how we diagnose it is we talk to family members, we talk to teachers, we talk to spouses, we talk to the person. I have people read a book. There's a lot of books out there on adult ADD, for instance. And there's some good screening tests like the ASRS, which is the Adult Self-Report Scale. It's just 9 questions on ADD, and it's fairly accurate. And there's, depending on how people score, we diagnose them as unlikely to have ADD, or likely, or definitely positive. Suze, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I think that thinking of it in terms of a disorder for children, it must be very, very frustrating, not only for the parents, but also the child herself. Certainly they're trying to work as hard as they can, but they seem to have like these roadblocks that they just can't get it together to get that homework done on time or to be able to sit quietly and listen to the teacher in the classroom. And obviously then their grades will suffer. And certainly this disorder has nothing to do with intelligence. I almost think of it as like just like a roadblock. They can't finish the race. They try to get the job done, but they can't. And then most likely their grades do suffer, and that's probably a blow to their self-esteem.
Yeah, I think that's a very good way of looking at it. The consequences of untreated ADD are enormous. If you look from age 16 to 20, there's like 9 times more likelihood in kids with ADD of car accidents. Now, there's still increased chance, even if they're treated, of car accidents, because they tend to be spacey and not paying attention and distracted. But if they're untreated, it's much higher. They have a lot more higher likelihood of drug abuse, of alcohol abuse as an adult or early adult, and also ending up in jail. Kids with untreated ADD don't finish college nearly as often. So there's a lot of consequences. Self-esteem is one. People's lives tend to fall apart. We always think of ADD as a serious problem in kids, but actually the consequences at age 25 or 30 are enormous, because instead of, you know, if you're in second grade and you're distracted, you will fall behind. It is a serious consequence, but nothing earth-shattering happens. You can catch up if it's caught and treated. But at age 25 or 30, people tend to be impulsive with ADD. They quit their jobs easily. They lose their jobs. They lose their house. They lose their families. And the consequences are more devastating. And the impulsivity, if you had to look at one thing with ADD, it's the impulsivity is a big problem. If that's not getting better around age 20 or so, we can be in trouble, because impulsivity at age 7 or 8, kids will run across the street or do this and that, jump off the jungle gym. But at age 25, we have drug abuse with impulsivity, or I think I'll get married today. Okay, whoever I'm going to get married to. Or I think I'll go gamble a whole lot of money, or shopaholics. So, you know, excessive shopping is not actually a diagnosis, but very often there's underlying psychiatric problems or like ADD or sometimes others. Any thoughts, Suze?
Well, it seems to me that early diagnosis then is very important. You know, certainly when a child is sitting in a classroom and a teacher notices behavior, that she can then talk to the parents and, you know, together as a team, the parents, the teacher, and a doctor can help this child get the help he needs, specifically with medicine and or therapy. As the child matures then and gets into his or her 20s, it's going to be a lot harder to get a diagnosis, and then that's most likely going to set that person up for more frustrations in his adulthood.
Yeah, isn't it like a lot of things where early intervention before major problems? You know, if somebody's 22 and they've fallen way behind in school and they're into drug abuse, et cetera, diagnosing the ADD may not be as effective as at age 8.
That's very true. And I would imagine that for these adults in their early adulthood, it must feel very frustrating because they really just don't know why they're having these problems. And, you know, they don't, haven't been able to get the help that they need. So they just kind of continue this a spiraling, in a way, of problems.
You know, they always say about ADD that they work twice as hard for half as much. And some of the kids who are bright can compensate, where if they do homework till 1 in the morning and do 4 hours to do an hour and a half worth, they do end up still with A's. But as time goes on in school and in college, it becomes tougher and tougher. There are some good resources. There's a couple of organizations, and I found a good magazine, actually, in Borders. It was ADDitude. It was more geared towards adults, Attitude. But I thought it was actually pretty good. And the question is, how do we really treat it? Therapy, medicine. There was an interesting NIH study, multi-million dollar study a few years ago that was sort of discouraging as far as non-medicine treatments. They put a huge amount of money into every student in the study outside of medicine and concluded that only the medicines did any good. The therapy and having a psychologist, social worker with the student all year, even one-on-one, didn't do that much good. But I think that social workers, psychologists who are adept with ADD and parents can really help, particularly with parent coaching, because parents need to take a little different approach with ADD. Suze?
Well, as you're talking about it, I'm thinking that this is a disorder that clearly... Isn't it true that with ADD and ADHD that just as many girls are afflicted with it as boys?
Well, yeah, girls tend to be underdiagnosed a bit because, well, classically we think of them as having less hyperactivity. But interestingly, there was a recent study that showed that girls had just as much hyperactivity as boys. And from age 15 to 20, most of the kids lose most of their fidgetiness, hyperactivity by age 20. It's really the attention problems that are the bigger problems. The hyperactive little boys can be a problem for the parents and teachers and schools, and we don't always educate them very well because we're educating them the same as the girls who sit and are quiet and pay attention, and the little boys are all over the place, so it's a tough thing. I don't want to blame the schools because it's very tough with money and with resources and everything, but the girls can get overlooked. I've had a number of women in my practice who are 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years old, who all of a sudden discover that they have ADD. Now, you had to have had it as a kid. You can't all of a sudden start having an attention problem as an adult and it's ADD. It can be something else. It could be depression, anxiety, dementia. It could be just worrying and medicines and just having trouble with attention. But people had to have had it as a kid. to diagnose it as ADD. Now, how about parenting and medicines?
Well, I think that parents can, you know, what about parents and medicating their children? I'm sure it runs the gamut. Some parents, out of their own frustration and or concern for their children, want to medicate their kids right away. I have a friend who's a teacher and has a few kids in her classroom. These are third graders whose parents do not want to medicate their children with ADD, and it makes for a very difficult classroom where there's kids that are jumping out of their seats all the time and aren't listening, and where other parents then get frustrated because so much time is spent trying to control these kids.
True, true. You know, so much time is spent on one or two kids out of the 20 in the classroom, even when they have an aide. It's a tough problem. I think that parents of kids with ADD, where it's more than mild, have a tough time. It's just like parents of kids with bipolar or parents of kids with autism. Our goals are different. Our parenting has to be different. I think some life coaching, parenting coaching can actually help, and reading about it, because it's a tricky thing with kids with ADD and with the impulsivity.
Well, maybe some parents are concerned that medicating their children might actually give their kids side effects down the road, and I'm not sure myself if there is a concern with that.
Well, it's interesting. A lot of parents do avoid medication or are fearful of medication, but when you look at those consequences that we talked about a minute ago of ADD that's untreated, with the drug abuse, with jail time, with just they end up not doing very well in life, I think the consequences of not treating are worse. And if you look at the medications, the stimulants are the number one medication, first-line medicines. For instance, like Adderall, Ritalin type. These have been around a long time. Adderall, amphetamines have actually been around since about 1900. Long, long time. Ritalin, methylphenidate, was introduced in 1954. I always remember 1954 because that's the year that I was born, showing you what an old fogey I am. But the stimulants are the number one treatment because they're the most effective. And there's various forms. There's short-acting, like Adderall or the generic, and Ritalin. Then there's long-acting, Adderall XR, which is a nice, smoother, longer-acting form. And Ritalin LA or Focalin are longer actings. And they just came out with a patch of Ritalin that lasts 9 to 12 hours. It's only technically indicated in kids. And I haven't used the patch. It just came out. It's called Daytrana. But I think it theoretically should be pretty good. Now, the side effects of the stimulants are quite a bit. Quite a number of kids have annoying side effects, like they lose their appetite, or sometimes they're nervous, or sometimes get really tired and crash, sometimes can't sleep. And these are what we call Schedule 2 medicines, so they're more controlled. Some kids do abuse them. They give them to friends. They sell them. The Adderall and amphetamines have been crushed and snorted. So there is abuse of these. In adults, we find relatively little abuse of these medicines for some reason. I haven't had almost any abuse. The question then is what to do if people cannot take the first-line stimulants or it's not appropriate. We have a whole host of other things that we use for second-line. You know, as far as the abuse of the drugs, the Ritalin, Adderall-type drugs, Susie, you were one of your jobs was school social worker working with kids who had problems with drugs. What do you think about the abuse of Adderall? Or did you see it in all your kids, or what was the case?
Well, I did. Now, I'd want to clarify and say that this was a high school that I was working in. And yes, there were kids who were selling their Adderall to other kids, you know, to make some money. And the kids who were purchasing it were then getting high off of it. I would not say that it was a huge concern, or certainly not as many kids were doing that as were drinking alcohol and smoking marijuana.
Yeah, so it is a concern with these drugs, the abuse, but it shouldn't. I don't think it should keep us from prescribing them.
Absolutely. One concern that did come up quite a bit, though, is when somebody would use somebody else's Adderall in conjunction with other drugs, say taking the Adderall or Ritalin, and then also drinking a lot of alcohol. So then it could become quite concerning that this person was going to really hurt himself.
Sort of that up and down, like alcohol and don't they have an alcohol and caffeine drink or so? It doesn't make much sense to me, but I think it's actually you can buy it. It's sort of like not Red Bull, but you know, like a Red Bull type with alcohol. Sounds like a terrible idea, actually. Actually, John Belushi ended up dying with speedballs, where he was injecting highs and lows. He was injecting amphetamines and heroin. So I guess you get the high and the low, and it's the buzz. What a lot of people do is they abuse uppers and amphetamines, and then use or cocaine, and then they use heroin or alcohol or downers to take the edge off as they're coming down. But back to the ADD meds, you know, if people can't take the stimulants or kids can't, there are a whole host of others. Strattera from Lilly is a newer one that basically looks like an antidepressant. We use Wellbutrin, which is an antidepressant, and some of the other older antidepressants we use. And also, it's off-label, but sometimes Provigil has been used, which is a medication that's used for excessive daytime sleepiness. It's definitely off-label. Unfortunately, for most of these medicines, it's off-label for ADD, except for the Strattera as the second line. But I don't think Strattera works nearly as well as the stimulants. Suze?
You know, I've been hearing more and more this term off-label. It's been making its way into the newspapers lately. Can you clarify what exactly off-label means?
Well, off-label, when drugs come on the market, the company goes for one indication or two indications, say depression or anxiety, or they'll go for pain. But then once it becomes on the market, it's evident that it's useful for several other conditions, and that's, quote, off-label, unquote. And it doesn't mean that it's bad to use it that way. In fact, many drugs, off-label prescribing is 90% of the use because they're really more useful for those things than for what it came on the market for. But 10 and 20 years ago, we had off-label, nobody even thought about legally or Department of Regulations off-label prescribing because it was normal. Now, people at doctors are getting sued, they're getting sanctioned. There's this whole big thing about not saying anything off-label at lectures. I give a lot of lectures. I give about 70 lectures a year. And 10 years ago, we could talk about anything and try to really educate the doctors and the medical residents. Now, we have to be so careful. Scarily enough, there was a big article in the paper. This doctor from out east, psychiatrist, believe it or not, is being indicted for promoting a drug off-label. They're trying to get at the company, so they're going through this doctor who is giving lectures. But he finished a lecture, comes off the podium, comes down, and the FBI handcuffs him and puts him in the car. It's sort of unbelievable. You know, I do want to finish the ADD section on somewhat of a positive note. Most people who are treated do very well, a lot better than before they were treated. It's mostly recognizing ADD, but we're recognizing it quite a bit better than we used to. Well, I think we'll wrap up our first show here. This has been the Dr. Robbins Show with my co-host, Susie Robbins. In future shows, we'll talk about lots and lots of medical issues and conundrums and psych issues and topics of the day. And I'm very interested in what you want to hear about. We can talk about anything. So please email us at DocLarryRobbins, DocLarryRobbins at AOL.com, which is also on the homepage of this site, headachedrugs.com. And we'll catch you next week. Bye now.